Hello, everybody. I hope you're all well. And welcome to the first episode of the Jordan and Teresa podcast, very uncreatively named. Every single podcast I listen to has a really cool and punny name. And this podcast, like, making experience has made me realize that I actually don't have a single creative bone in my body. So we're just going to have to deal with the Jordan Teresa podcast because I can't think of anything else. Or, like, I imagine that if I thought of something that someone else would have had it, and then I would have ended up in, like, a lengthy legal battle with some other podcast. Can you guys tell how, like, my brain works and how I catastrophize things very quickly? But anyways, welcome to the first episode of the Jordan Teresa podcast. I'm actually really, really excited. The reason that I am making this is because, obviously, I only post sort of once a month on my YouTube because my YouTube videos are very, I feel like high quality is a bit of a reach, but my YouTube videos are very, you know, it takes me a long time to make them and to research them, and I don't want to, like, overwork myself on YouTube and get burnt out. But I also wanted to have, like, another, is a podcast really a creative outlet? a creative outlet, I guess, which I could do a little bit more, like, relaxed. I'm not sure whether I want to, like, actually record. Today I'm not recording on a camera because, no joke, I don't look like shit because I don't like to chat badly about the way that I look because it's just bad energy, isn't it? But I'm wearing a cream Nike tracksuit which is covered in Ribena and tomato sauce. My flat is an absolute mess at the moment. Like, I was cooking up a storm in the kitchen, girls, and I made a chili, which is why I'm absolutely covered in food. And I just couldn't, you know what? I just couldn't be asked. But maybe my next episode I'll record, like, visually, because I don't know, do people like watching podcasts? Do people watch podcasts? Because as I'm a podcast listener, I'm not a podcast watcher. Do you know what I mean? So what to expect from this podcast is, you know what? My boyfriend thought of the tagline of juicy tits, even juicier conversation, basically. I'm just going to talk about anything and everything, really. I think I'm going to set up a Patreon next month, but I'm going to see how it goes first because I've never recorded a podcast. And I'm worried about, like, starting a Patreon and having all of these perks and benefits and then giving up within a month. And, like, obviously I'd refund everybody and do the right thing. Obviously, I'm not going to run off with everyone's money, but having to refund everybody and just the public humiliation that may come with that. So I'm going to just roll with it this month and see how it goes. And today I've actually decided to focus on just one thing, which has been taking Twitter by storm, girls. And it is, according to Molly May, we all have the same 24 hours in a day. And I really wanted to talk about this because I am kind of a bit obsessed with influencers. I find it all very interesting. And I also find, you know, class and classism and sociology all very interesting. And I feel like this puts the two things that I find really interesting together to talk about. So I just thought I would get started, really. Some of you guys might not be from the UK and might have absolutely no idea who Molly May is. Basically, she is a UK influencer and YouTuber who basically became really famous on Love Island. She already had a platform before. I think she had around 100,000 followers, but Love Island really, like, threw her into the mainstream. And sorry, guys, I'm struggling. Usually I do everything, like, by the script, and this is the first time I'm having to actually, like, I've literally taken one page of notes down, and usually I write, like, 5,000 word scripts. So can you guys tell I'm extremely nervous? And basically, most people know that people go on Love Island is a UK reality show, but I know they have loads of other versions in other countries. And basically, people used to go on there to find love, and now it's very much done as a business move. Like, the people that go on Love Island, I'd probably say 90% of them are going on there to grow their Instagram and to grow their brand as a person and, like, to be an influencer, basically, because as someone who is a YouTuber and could be considered an influencer, there is a lot of money in influencing. And compared to other jobs, it's really fucking easy. And also, I wanted to talk about this because I feel like my perspective, I'm someone who has worked a normal job. I worked customer service, I worked in Starbucks, and then I was also a beautician for a few years, which I'm not going to lie, absolutely loved my job as a beautician. Hated the company I worked for, but loved the job. But anyways, and now I'm someone who's a full-time YouTuber. I'm not sure whether I'm considered an influencer because technically I do have influence, but And I feel like, again, I'm being a little bit snooty maybe, but I do feel like I do put in a little bit more work, like, because I write all scripts and I make like hour long videos, but obviously I don't want to like put myself above anyone, because not being funny, I would not be able to be an influencer. Having to get someone to take pictures of me every day like actually sounds like my worst nightmare. And bear in mind, guys, I'm so vain, like my head is shoved so far up my own ass, and I love the way that I look, but I do not think that I could do that. So, but anyways, so basically Molly Mae is really, really popular influencer who became really popular on Love Island, and recently she became the creative director of Pretty Little Thing, which is a British fast fashion brand, but I think that they like ship worldwide. Is it British? I'm actually not sure. I feel like it is. And they are a notorious fast fashion brand. Like, I feel like a majority of brands are unfortunately fast fashion. I feel like that's just the direction that fashion has gone in. Like Urban Outfitters is fast fashion, Zara's fast fashion, but I feel like sort of that group of Pretty Little Thing, to be fair, Zara can be included in there as well, but like Pretty Little Thing, Misguided, Boohoo are like notorious for treating their employees really badly and having, well, I'm gonna say allegedly, I'm not trying to get sued, having sweatshops. And yeah, and there was basically an investigation, I think it was a couple years ago now, it was in the first lockdown, where they actually had factories in Leicester, I believe, that were paying their employees £3.50 an hour, and they were doing it all cash in hand and under the books, which is how they got away with it. It was really, really bad. And those were the Boohoo, Misguided and Pretty Little Thing factories, I believe. And obviously overseas in overexploited countries, the pay and the working conditions are going to be so much worse. So she is the creative director for that company. Also, she's only 22 years old, and I did not realize that. I thought she was at least a couple years older than me. I'm 23. So finding out that she was actually like a year younger than me made me feel really bad about myself. Is that ridiculous? To be fair, I do think I'm successful for my age. I'm very, very proud of myself. Like, even though, oh my God, guys, my job gives me so much fucking anxiety, you don't realize. Again, I sound like some pretentious YouTuber. I'm just an anxious person anyways. I was talking to Lem about it yesterday, like how anxious my job makes me, and like maybe I should just quit and like go and get a normal job and maybe like my anxiety would go away. And he was like, you're just an anxious person. Like, you're just going to get anxious about something else. I'm like, that's very, very true. But anyway, sorry, I'm already going off track. You know, so she's only 22 years old and she is a millionaire. She spoke about on this podcast that she went on that her goal was to get a million in her bank account. And when she got a million, she said she just wanted more, which I feel like is just like, isn't that just capitalism? Like, she's almost like a, not necessarily a victim to capitalism because she's a millionaire, but almost like a victim to the hustle mindset where she got, guys, £1 million in her bank account. And was like, nah, not good enough. I want more. Like, how crazy is that? I can't even fathom having a million in my bank account. And I'm not even, like, I'm doing quite well for myself, I think, for my age. And I still, did my boyfriend just drop something? My boyfriend's causing a ruckus upstairs. I told him to be quiet for an hour and look what he's doing. Anyways, I'm someone who I believe I'm doing quite well. And I still cannot even fathom having £1 million in my bank account. So, yeah. And she has worked with Pretty Little Thing, which she's now the creative director of, Beautyworks, Opoly, Ego, and she is the founder of her own fake tan brand, Filter by Molly Mae. And I am making this podcast episode as someone who, am I ashamed to admit this? Not really. I was a bit of a Molly Mae stan, I can't lie. And I'm not saying this as like, I was necessarily invested in her life, because I didn't really like her all that. I didn't hate her on Love Island, but I wasn't like a fan of her on Love Island. And I don't really care about her getting proposed to in New York. Like, I don't care. But that bitch knows how to sell a product, okay? I'm telling you guys, I have both of her curling ones and I use her fake tan and I use Beautyworks extensions because I know her hair looks really good and I try them, and guys, they're so fucking good. Like, I know, I bought all of her products. I'm a stan. Like, I literally have her hairbrush right here, guys. I have her Beautyworks hairbrush on the table. I have my CEO hairbrush, as Lem calls it. Anyways, so I'm coming from someone who I did actually quite like her and her products. So basically, the whole controversy is, now that I've explained who Molly Mae is, oh my God, we're 10 minutes in and I haven't even got onto it. She went on Stephen Bartlett's podcast, I think it's called Diary of a CEO. Yep, The Diary of a CEO, where he interviews all sorts of different CEOs, and they're fairly uncontroversial, I guess, because the type of audience that Stephen reaches to is clearly, you know, rise and grind, I work 25/8, like those kinds of people. So, and he has, I mean, I don't particularly think he's a bad person. I mean, he's had one of his pinned tweets is Jordan Peterson, but let's not talk about that. And he has actually conducted, I haven't listened to them myself, but I've heard like online and stuff that some of the other interviews that he's done with other CEOs have actually been pretty good. Like he's interviewed the CEO of Gymshark, Grace Beverly, stuff like that. But this one with Molly May just did not go according to plan. And I saw a tweet actually where he said at the beginning of the podcast, Molly rarely does interviews, and it's like, yeah, no wonder. God bless. Like, oh my God. So basically, Molly said, I'm going to see if I can insert a clip if I'm allowed to. I'm not sure if, I don't know how podcast copywriting works. But basically, she said that we all have the same 24 hours in a day as Beyonce. And even though she's been slammed for it in the past, you know, if you want something enough, you should work for it. You know, it's your life. You can do what you want with it. We all have the same 24 hours in a day. That's what really stood out, was Molly May was saying, we all have the same 24 hours in a day. So honestly, she basically was saying, if you are unsuccessful, it is your fault. Like she literally said, like, I know that like people will live in poverty, but like we all have the same 24 hours in a day. And it's like, oh my goodness. So I just want to unpack that today and talk about maybe why she may think like that, why she's wrong. I feel like we all kind of know why she's wrong, but yeah, so let's just talk about it. So firstly, I want to talk about why she may think this way, why she thinks that, you know, basically she sort of, she has very meritocracy. She believes in meritocracy. She believes in meritocracy. Very Miss Margaret May. Someone said it, tweeted that she was going to release her own line of bootstraps to pull ourselves up by, and it really made me laugh. But yeah, no, so clearly she believes in meritocracy. She believes if you work hard, you will be successful, which obviously most of us know isn't the case. And I think probably the reason why she thinks like that is she is from a middle-class family, but she isn't from a wealthy family. She's from a middle-class family, which still, when you are from a middle-class family, you are given a range of advantages, which people who are from working-class families do not get. And I feel like because I'm someone who comes from a middle-class family, because it's almost seen as normal, you don't realize the privileges and the benefits that you have because you aren't super, super rich, if that makes sense. Like, you don't realize the benefits of, like, for example, for a while I used to think, not for a while, like for a couple of years, like when I was a teenager and I had like 10,000 subscribers on YouTube, I used to think like, oh yeah, well, you know, I've done that myself and anyone can do it. But then I realized as I got older, when I was like probably 18, 19, 20, that everything I got from my YouTube was given to me as a gift for like my birthday or Christmas. So I got studio light given to me. I got a camera, a tripod, all of that. If my family were working class and couldn't afford that, then I would have never been able to start my YouTube. So I feel like because she's middle class and she became wealthy, like she did work to get wealthy, she thinks that because she's done it from a middle class background, that anyone can do it from any background. But one thing which she does do quite often, which I find really interesting, is she basically denies how much Love Island has helped her. And what I mean by that is, so she went on Love Island season 5, which I'm pretty sure is the season which has done the best ratings wise and views wise, and in my opinion it's one of my favorite seasons. It was really, really good. Yes guys, I'm a Love Island fan. I think we could have all guessed that, but anyways, so she went on the show, she came second place, and basically just stopped talking about it after. Like, I'm pretty sure she's removed most of the posts which were posted during Love Island. She basically never talks about how she was on Love Island, never talks about Love Island the show, and also basically says that she believes she would have been in the same place that she was now if she hadn't gone on the show, which I find really interesting. I think most of us know that she probably would not be anywhere near as successful as she is now because of Love Island. But I think that she thinks that way because one thing I will give her credit for is the way that she marketed herself compared to other influencers who went on Love Island was completely different, and she honestly did really, really well for it. Before sort of Molly May, I guess, BMM before Molly May, basically people would go off the show and they'd kind of just advertise anything and everything on Instagram. So basically all of their hashtag ads came across as just completely disingenuous. Meanwhile, with Molly May, she basically only worked with a select few brands that you can tell she actually likes. And from someone who has bought her Beautyworks products, buys Beautyworks extensions, and uses her fake tan, I don't buy things from Pretty Little Thing because, I mean, I'm not like completely, I don't completely cut fast fashion out, but I obviously try my best. But also Pretty Little Thing is not worth it. All their quality is absolute dog shit. And I'm not, guys, does anyone else have this theory? I feel like this must be common sense. They must make different clothes for her because the clothes that she wears in her Instagram posts and that she models for the adverts look so drastically different from the clothes which you will receive in the post. Like, I saw a TikTok where someone's Pretty Little Thing pleather trousers melted. They melted in the Ghanaian sun. Like, oh my God. So obviously the quality isn't great. So that's why I don't shop from Pretty Little Thing. But anyway, so she marketed herself completely differently, and I'm pretty sure she has the most followers of any Love Island alumni, I guess. And she's just done really well. Like, she's just basically the richest, most successful, most followed person. And not everyone on Love Island can say that because she picked and chose. I'm not sure whether I'm using correct vocab. She picked and chose what brands she wanted to work with. And she was really picky and she worked with people that she wanted to work with. And eventually she ended up becoming creative director of Pretty Little Thing. And I think the reason why she thinks that Love Island hasn't helped her is because there are so many influencers who went on Love Island who are nowhere near as successful as she is. But one thing she does need to realize is she did come second place. She was on a season which did do particularly well. So obviously she is going to have far more advantages than someone who went on Casa Amor and like you only saw like 5 minutes of screen time from them. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, no, I sort of just wanted to talk about the privileges which Molly has and why clearly not everyone has 24 hours in a day, because I just find it so interesting the way that she's just like so oblivious to it all. She is white, and obviously hustle culture isn't exclusive to white people, but obviously there are many benefits and privileges and white privilege that comes with being white. I'm not sure whether that sentence made sense. And one thing which is really important to note is algorithms tend to favor white people. I know that there is actually an influencer pay gap between black influencers and white influencers. I know that there was, I'm trying to think if it was like an investigation or a study which showed that black influencers were being paid significantly less than white influencers despite having the same following. You know, she is conventionally attractive, she's middle class, she's thin, she's able-bodied, she has all of these privileges which not everyone is going to have, especially going on a show like Love Island. You know, going on Love Island helped her massively, and also she was approached by the show, which basically if you're approached by Love Island, it's sort of guaranteeing that you're going to get a decent amount of airtime. So she was given a business opportunity based on her looks and her attractiveness and her sort of influencer type platform, like all based on her looks, really. So already she was benefiting from that massively. And I think the one thing which makes this so like extra hypocritical is that she is the creative director of Pretty Little Thing. And I think this is the reason why when she does respond to this, it's going to be extremely indifferent, because she cannot have any sort of social or class awareness or appear to have any social or class awareness whilst being the creative director for a brand like Pretty Little Thing, which exploits people constantly. Imagine saying to someone who works in one of her sweatshops on £3.50 an hour, oh, you have the same 24 hours in a day though. Like, no, it doesn't work. And I think I'm shocked that she said all that stuff in the interview, because I think, oh my gosh, have you not been media trained? Like, why hasn't no one media trained her? Because I think, you know, I never expect any sort of like hard-hitting class or social analysis from someone like Molly May when she is head of a company which is so, so deeply corrupt and unethical. And it's not even when it comes to, I mean, it's not just rather how much they pay their employees. Pretty Little Thing causes so much waste to go into the earth. Like, fast fashion brands, especially giants like Pretty Little Thing, cause so much fucking climate damage. It's actually a joke. So I don't expect Molly May to be aware of like social mobility and class because she works with such a horrible company. I'm sure she's aware of it, but she has to be willfully ignorant, otherwise she just looks like a massive hypocrite. So after this clip went viral, she ended up trending number one on Twitter for 2 days. Like, it was bad. And one thing I will say about Molly May is that she does get a lot of unnecessary flack. Like, I remember once she said that she didn't like the food in Italy and she started trending on Twitter. The time when her dog died, she was trending on Twitter. Like, she does get a lot of criticism. And a part of me thinks maybe she just switches herself off to all criticism, even if it's valid, because she does get criticized no matter what she does, really. But this time was definitely like extremely, extremely fair criticism. So this clip ended up going viral and she was trending on Twitter for 2 days. And the guy who created the podcast, Stephen Bartlett, actually tweeted a response, which I want to talk about because let me just read it first. Okay, so Stephen tweeted, "Molly May did an interview on my podcast. Yesterday, a soundbite from that interview went viral. She trended number one on Twitter. Every newspaper covered it and MPs weighed in. I've had male guests say what she said. No one cared. But when Molly says it, she's crucified. Crazy. I've become very aware of the double standard that successful women face. If I interview a man, he can brag about money, take full credit for his success, and talk about his cars. If I interview a successful woman, she's got to tiptoe around her success and watch her words. Gender issues aside, the standard we hold Molly May to as a 22-year-old that's figuring out the world is absolutely outrageous. She once said she didn't like Italian food. It trended number one all day. She was written about in every newspaper and she had an issue of public apology. 22. Okay, so one thing I hate is when men stick their noses in women's business. I hate when men, that's it. I am so sick of men trying to use feminism to, whenever anyone criticizes a successful, wealthy woman, it's always, oh, but what about feminism? And don't get me wrong, there definitely are times when successful women are like, there's definitely times where successful women are more criticized because they are women. Like, even though Hillary Clinton's a horrible person and her husband's been accused of sexual harassment and assault, whenever people criticize her, people would say, oh, you're being misogynistic, that's not very feminist of you. And obviously a lot of the hatred towards her was just because she was a woman, but also a large amount of the hatred towards her was because she's a bad person. But anyways, that put on my person sounded like poor Peter Parker. I watched Spider-Man No Way Home the other day. Andrew Garfield's really hot. Anyways, I hate it. I hate it when men try to talk about feminism when they clearly have no idea what the fuck they're talking about. And see, first of all, Molly May reaches an audience which not a lot of the people who he interviews reach, let's be honest. And also when I see successful men bragging about like cars and money, yeah, cool, because I don't hold rich men to a very high standard. A majority of rich and wealthy men, are horrible people. Do you know what I mean? I think because Molly has built a platform, like I've watched some of her YouTube videos, she always comes across as very nice and very humble. So, you know, she's built that platform for herself. And also she's probably the most famous guest that this guy has ever had. And the thing is, there's nothing wrong with like talking about your successes. Like, one person who he had on the podcast was Grace Beverly, who has built an entire business and like brand for herself and done really well. But also what she did is she acknowledged the privilege that came with it. You know, she used to follow me. She followed me on Instagram and then she unfollowed me. And like, I'm not even necessarily upset about it. I just want to know what was the post. What was, because I used to shit post on my stories all the time. I want to know what was the post that pushed her over the edge. That she was like, nah, fuck this, can't be asked, don't want to follow her anymore. Anyways, and he has also interviewed the CEO of Gymshark, I don't know what his name is, but he's interviewed him, and even though that guy, I'm pretty sure it comes from a working class background, he also acknowledges the fact that a lot of it was actually down to luck. And that's, you know, Molly just didn't really seem to exclaim any of that. She just did come across as very tone deaf in that interview. And I think what pissed me off the most about this Stephen guy trying to throw in feminism and talk about feminism is that the overseas garment workers that work in the PLT sweatshops, they are completely overexploited. They work in dangerous working conditions and they are horrifically underpaid. And a majority of them are women. Are we going to start talking about feminism now? Come on. Tell me more about feminism, Stephen. No? Or do you only like to talk about feminism when it applies to wealthy white women? No? Anyways, so that really, really annoyed me. But one thing I do actually really want to talk about, which I've wanted to talk about on the podcast, is being an influencer actually hard? Because influencers often talk about like hard work and how difficult it is and how hard they've worked. And I just find it very interesting. And I feel like my perspective is maybe, I don't know, appreciate it. That was pretentious. Maybe you guys would like to hear my perspective as someone who is now a YouTuber but did work in customer service. So quick little background, worked in Starbucks for a few years, and then I was a beautician for a few years, and then I went into lockdown, sponged all the furlough I could got, sponged all the furlough I could get rather, and then I ended up doing YouTube full-time. So I definitely think that there is this pressure which comes with working in social media, which unless you do work in social media, people won't particularly understand. I don't know whether it's just because I'm an anxious person in general that my anxiety, no matter what I do, will manifest in a different place. But at the moment, a lot of my anxiety has just completely manifested itself into YouTube and my work, and it's extremely stressful and, you know, I don't really like have a time where I'm relaxed, but also I wasn't really relaxed in my old job either. Like I still had anxiety, but it's just manifested itself into a different place. And I think that probably being I'm not an Instagram influencer, but I can imagine being an Instagram influencer can be quite tough on the old self-esteem, like having to basically put a lot of your value in the way that you look and the way that you dress and the way that you do your makeup. Can't exactly be super like easy on the brain, you know. I can imagine it does take its mental toll, because I remember the time when I used to take loads of selfies. How absolutely like first world problem does that sound? I was taking selfies and it made me sad. Basically, I just kept, you know when you try to take a nice picture of yourself and you do your makeup nicely and they all come out horrible and you think you're just a hideous ugly mess and that you'd never want to see daylight ever again. It was basically like, you know, it was really like, you know, I just had very, very low self-esteem, basically. And I can imagine that if you're an influencer, there's definitely a lot of that. And also, you're your own boss. You have to do all your own emails, which I don't do. I have a manager. But I can imagine that's a little bit long. And also, you have to build your own platform, which, you know, my big pet peeve, to be fair, I'm not an influencer, but like as a YouTuber, I have spent a long time trying to build my own platform. And one thing is that obviously with my YouTube videos, I make scripts. I can't just put on a camera and like do my makeup and stuff. Obviously, I'm not saying that that's not difficult, but you know what I mean. I basically research and I make these really long scripts. Usually they're around 5,000 words, but my Biggest Loser video, which I split into two parts, was 10,000 words. My Hell's Kitchen video was 7,000 words. So I make these really, really fucking long scripts and it's really hard work. And one thing which is a bit of a pet peeve of mine is, you know, like when people say that my job is easy, like it is a pet peeve. I understand why people may think an influencer job is easy, because a lot of it is just taking Instagram pictures, but also I can be an influencer myself. I don't know how hard or easy it is. And again, when I say I'm a YouTuber, I'm not an influencer, I'm not like necessarily trying to say that I'm better, but I'm saying that what I do is very different. So I obviously make these really, really long scripts. And one thing which I do kind of miss about like working was that I could show up to my beautician job and I could mentally switch off. I could just mentally switch off and just do my work and then go home and then that was it. I wouldn't have to think of work at all. Now I just sort of think of work all the time. Like there isn't really a time I could switch off. And this could very easily be solved if I just like did a schedule. But I'm one of those people where it's like, I fancy a lion. I'll just work until 10 p.m. Or I'm one of those people that like won't work for a week and then I'll cram all of my work into the next week and do like 12, 13 hour days. So as you guys can tell, maybe the self-employed life isn't for me. But yeah, so I do actually have to put a lot of effort in basically, and I have to really mentally be in the zone to do YouTube work. But one thing is that being a YouTuber still, despite the fact that I do make these really long videos, is 10 times fucking easier than when I worked at Starbucks or when I was a beautician. Because yeah, sure, it's hard work, but also I get to choose my own hours. So most of the time, if I'm tired, I'll just sleep in. And I know that that's something so silly to think about, like the power of sleeping in, but oh my God, you know how much easier my life is that I'm not sleep deprived anymore? Because you know, when I was at Starbucks, I used to have to wake up at 4 a.m. for a shift. And when I was a beautician, I used to wake up at like 8, which obviously is like normal time, like 7, 8. But like sometimes I wouldn't go to bed till like 1 or 2. And it just makes such a huge difference actually having the ability to choose your schedule and be able to get a full night's sleep. And also not having to commute. Obviously, I know that most people work from home now, but you know, Starbucks, beautician work, you have to actually go in. The amount of money that I save from not having to commute anymore, the amount of time that I save is just like ridiculous. And another thing which I think a lot of influencers who probably haven't had normal jobs, even though it can be hard work being a YouTuber and stuff, they don't realize how rewarding their job is. I've been thinking about it recently, how rewarding my job is. I, as much as you know, my job gives me, because I'm in my anxiety era, as much as my job does give me a lot of anxiety, one thing I will say is that when I do post a video, if it goes down well, it is the most rewarding, like wholesome experience, you know, because I get to read all of these comments of people being so nice to me. You guys DM me and say how much you love my videos. And it just means so much. And it's so, so rewarding getting approval from so many people and telling, and people telling you like, oh, you're doing a good job. Like, thanks for this. Like, it's so, so rewarding. And another thing to talk about is the money. YouTube and influencing is really good money. And it's, and I'm pretty sure, is influencing better money than YouTube? I think it depends what you do, because obviously Molly May's making way more money than I am. But I am making a lot more money than I did when I was a beautician. And even though I put in a lot of hours and I put in a lot of work, my work feels like it's paid off. Like my hard work pays off in the end. When I was a beautician and I was working 9 hours a day waxing people's vaginas, like actually sweating waxing people's vaginas, and in the end I'd get like 60 quid at the end of a shift. And it's just, you know, and your manager doesn't appreciate anything you do, and neither do the higher managers. And it's just like, one thing I remember working, especially at my old job as a beautician, as much as I loved my clients and I love doing what I do, I'm a real people person, you know, I love the girls that I worked with. And one of my assistant manager was really nice. I loved my assistant manager. And I love my clients and I love what I did, you know, like it's nice making people feel good about themselves. Like I know it's silly, but like I'd have a client that would come in for like full body wax and their eyebrows and eyelash tint, and they just feel really good at the end. And that was really nice. But the one thing which I just could not let go of was the fact that I just felt so exploited in that job. I was paid, was it £8? I was paid £8 an hour, and then I got a pay rise to £9.50. But London living wage is like £11 an hour. So I wasn't even on London living wage. And I just remember just feeling like I'm doing all this hard work for this company and getting nothing out of it. And another thing that this company did, because sure, I could have worked hard and tried to move up the company, as probably Molly May would recommend, is that they wouldn't even promote people. They'd promote people to supervisors and managers, but they would never, ever, ever let people who worked in stores work in the head office. And I just remember being like so pissed off about it, because there was just no, as much as I love what I did, there was just no money in it. And I just felt like so underappreciated. And that's just a feeling which, you know, if you get on the good side of YouTube and you're working really hard, you know, you always have people patting you on the back. my job felt so thankless, and a majority of jobs in general are just completely thankless, especially sort of ones like customer service, minimum wage jobs are just so thankless. Like, you know, you get shit money, you get treated like shit by customers, and you get treated like shit by your managers. But yeah, one thing which actually, I'm going to round it off now, but one thing which really stood out to me in the podcast was how she talks about how she like always wants more, and that she's never happy with the successes that she got, and how she has $1 million in her bank account and then wanted 2 million. Oh my god. I feel like that's just sort of a symptom of capitalism, isn't it? She's not really a victim of capitalism, because she's doing extremely well, but it does say a lot to have £1 million in your bank account and still not be happy with your successes. But yeah, that's the end of this podcast. I'm not sure how much like this. I've only been recording for 40 minutes. And I think I'm probably going to cut it down to about half an hour, because a lot of it was, I was sat here pondering my orb. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this. This was just something to talk about, like one thing. But next time I think I'm going to talk about sort of multiple things in one episode and see how it goes. I'm in my experimental phase of the podcast. But yes, I hope that you guys enjoyed this, and I will see you soon for the next episode. Bye.